Okay, Gary, why don't you wind up the rubber bands and let's see if we can make this thing fly. Go.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Another victory for international communication.
All right. Yes, I want to come back to the issue of the acquisition of an interest in the joint operation. In circumstances in which the activity of the joint operation constitutes a business as defined in IFRS 3. The committee discussed this issue in January and directed the staff to draft a recommendation of the committee to the board to add new guidance to IFRS 11 and to analyze how detailed this guidance should be. Accordingly, we want to discuss in this meeting what the new guidance to IFRS 11 should look like based on the conclusions reached by the committee in previous meetings. With respect to the level of detail for the guidance to develop, we recommend to add a general reference to IFRS 11 to the relevant principles of business combination accounting and the related disclosure requirements in IFRS 3 and other IFRSs, and to add minimal application guidance to address the issues on which the submission and our outreach activities have identified significant diversity on. We recommend this approach because it aligns most closely with the concept of IFRS 11 to make reference to other IFRSs for the accounting details. Then it aligns most closely with the objective of the IFRS Foundation to develop financial reporting standards based on clearly articulated principles. And third, it addresses the issue for which we noted significant diversity in practice on in the accounting for such acquisitions. We think that the proposed amendment to IFRS 11 should be applied prospectively and that paragraph C5 of IFRS 1 should be amended to avoid confusion about the applicability of the exemptions for business combinations to the acquisition of an interest in a joint operation whose activities constitute a business. Consequently, we propose that the committee should recommend to the board that the board requests from the committee to develop guidance on the accounting for the acquisition of an interest in a joint operation whose activity constitutes a business as defined in IFRS 3 on behalf of the board, and Appendix A of the agenda paper includes a draft wording for the amendment. We want to ask the following five questions to the committee. First, does the committee agree with the summary of the conclusions that it has reached so far in Appendix C of the paper? In other words, are these conclusions summarized correctly? Second, does the committee agree that the level of detail of the proposed new guidance should be based on the general reference approach and only minimal application guidance should be added? Third, does the committee agree that the proposed amendment to IFRS 11 should be applied prospectively and that no consequential amendments to other IFRSs except for the consequential amendment to paragraph C5 of IFRS 1 are needed? Fourth, does the committee agree with the recommendation that the board should request from the committee to develop guidance on the accounting for the acquisition of an interest in a joint operation in circumstances in which the activity of the joint operation constitutes a business on behalf of the board? And finally, does the committee agree with the proposed wording for the amendment to IFRS 11 in Appendix A of the paper?
Comments? Guido?
Two things that I would like to mention, though. One is looking into the new 21A in IFRS 11. I think we should make clear that that only applies to the acquisition of interest in joint operation where the acquirer gets joint control. You may also acquire an interest in a joint operation where you don't have joint control. Others have control. So that's one thing. And the other one is I guess we need to look into IS 12 to make sure that wherever we refer to business combinations, where there are specific rules in IS 12 when it comes to deferred taxes for business combinations, that we should make sure that that only also applies to these transactions that we are looking at here. For instance, the initial recognition exemption applies only to business doesn't apply to business combinations. I would expect that it also applies to this kind of transactions here soon. In IS 12, we should then make clear that it does not only apply to business combinations, but maybe to transactions that are accounted for under IFRS 3, which would include also these transactions here.
So, yeah, please.
Yeah, my question is then, we thought we addressed this by making this general reference in, what is it, draft, paragraph, B38, and that these paragraphs in IS 12 applies.
Well, I think what Guido is saying is we do have some pretty specific guidance in B38, and he just wants to make sure that the initial recognition exemption is covered off too. So that's just adding an E to your list there.
Well, actually, so, Guido, can I just check? Were you suggesting that we need to amend IS 12 with a consequential amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
It's not only the initial recognition exemption. There are also some other rules in IS 12 that are specific to
business combinations. I see. I misunderstood.
And I would think they would also apply here.
And next question, then, Guido, do you only think that we need to amend IS 12 or also, for example, IS 38, who has also very specific guidance on intangible assets acquired in a business combination?
It's a good question. I haven't thought about that, but probably yes. I don't know exactly what specific guidance you're referring to, but if we think that the same rules apply for this kind of transaction, so I would expect that we have consequential amendments in all the standards that address business combinations. I have to say I thought about IS 12 because we discussed this deferred tax asset issue in respect of this transaction, but you may be right that also 38 needs to have some consequential amendments.
Okay, I have Ruth, Joanna, Philippe, Andrew.
Okay, a couple of...
Hey, long.
I think in order of the questions you asked, but possibly not. I agree with the summary of the conclusions that we reached. I have a couple of concerns about, and they're not drafting, it's to me the way the standard now reads. Because the way it's drafted in Appendix A, the reference to IFRS 3 is indirect. It says, it doesn't actually say that IFRS 3 applies, it sort of alludes to it and says the guidance is in section B, which is the application guidance. And I would have thought that we would have at least said specifically in cases where it's a joint operation, which is a business, the principles of IFRS 3 apply. I would have thought we would say that in IFRS 11 and then go to the guidance. So that's my first major point about it. Secondly, I couldn't find either in the amendments or in the bases for conclusions the discussion that you had in your previous paper about the bits of IFRS 3 that don't apply because they're not relevant. And there was a very good staff paper for last meeting that explained why they didn't apply and why they weren't relevant. And I thought that would be helpful to put in the basis as well, because otherwise people will think, well, do I apply all of it, or do I only apply the four things you've listed here? And so I think for the sake of completeness, we should put it in. Third thing is the example that you've given, which you've said is just for us, and you had no intention of putting it in the standard. I think we should put it in the standard because people in practice don't understand what the standard says. in terms of how you apply the principles of IFRS 11, what the difference is between proportionate consolidation and accounting for an interest in a joint operation. And I think this is a very good example that illustrates the difference, because you've got, in one aspect, I think, only a certain percentage of an intangible asset, and the example shows the different accounting. So I would encourage the example to go in as an example, as an illustrative example. My final comment is that I agree with the prospective application.
Joanna?
I agree, and I was going to make the comment with Ruth about paragraph 21A. I actually think the first bit of B38 is probably better in 21A, i.e. apply the principles of 3 as opposed to the application, because that's actually in the standard. I actually have a concern about whether it is correct in B38 that we should list A to D, for the reason, as Ruth says, does that mean they're the only bits that apply? Like, why are we picking on those? If we're doing a general application, why do we need to specify those four things? I think the discussion in the basis for conclusions, because those were the controversial things, is okay around those things, but I would remove it from the actual application guidance and simply say apply the principles of 3, because it does beg the question, is it only those four, what don't you do, etc. So that would be my recommendation, to remove those. In the basis for conclusions itself, I'm fully supportive of it, but I'm wondering whether it is missing our conclusions, because one of the big things was whether or not we should just go with the general, or whether in fact we should repeat everything. And this doesn't talk about why we've just gone with the general reference, and I think it probably should, because I think that was a core part of our decision making, and I support Ruth of actually saying put this example actually in there as well, because that again, it provides some practical guidance.
But overall, I'm supportive of
this. I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, that we put A to D in there to make it clear in the standard that you couldn't cherry pick the parts of 3 that you did and didn't want to apply. And it seemed to me to be the principles for it. I agree with the point about you need to explain why there are some other things you don't do, but these are the ones where we identified diversity in practice. In any event, Philippe, I think you're next.
Could you clarify for me why you chose to amend IFRS 11 rather than IFRS 3? Because presumably what you have is an already existing joint operation, which has been formed by joint operator, that is covered, that formation, by IFRS 11. And it is a subsequent transaction, if I understand correctly, whereby someone else would buy an interest without becoming a joint operator?
No.
Or replacing one of the joint operator?
Or forming it.
Or if it is on formation, I agree it should be IFRS 11, but why do we talk about acquiring then an interest rather than participating in the formation?
We scoped out the formation.
You scoped out the formation. That's not that we're here. You are talking about an acquisition of an interest, which is necessarily subsequent to the formation, otherwise it would be scoped in.
We didn't have control.
Well, I'm sure I want to understand exactly the scope of this interpretation. Either it is about the formation, and hence it is normally covered by IFRS 11, and the idea to amend, make some additional guidance for IFRS 11 is okay, but if it is an acquisition subsequent to the formation, then I don't understand why it is not covered by IFRS 3, or why you should not amend or provide additional guidance in IFRS 3 rather than amending IFRS 11, then. It's about the...
Whether you acquire or whether you form, it's the same as you are still entering into a joint operation.
Agreed, but it seems to me that the question you receive is the applicability of IFRS 3 business combinations which to me means it is not about the formation, but it is an acquisition of an interest in joint operation. So I already have a joint operation here in place, and someone is acquiring an interest. So either replacing an existing joint operator or joining the group as an additional joint operator. So I don't have clear in my mind what kind of situations would be covered by this guidance.
It's
whether it's IFRS 3 or 11.
It's the venturer's accounting for its acquisition of the joint venture.
That's B. That's question B, 1B.
Couldn't be in IFRS 3 because it didn't control it.
No, but
it was a business that was not controlled. So we felt it couldn't be in IFRS 3.
That's one. It seems to me there are two questions. One A, joint operators, for joint arrangement, and then 1B, interest in joint ventures. Probably two different situations.
Philippe, A and B there are just referring to the two different pieces of literature, the old and the new. It's the same question for both.
Yeah. But again, so what is exactly the point in time when this guidance would apply? Upon formation or later on, a transaction subsequent to the formation?
I think both.
So, all right. So, in the first case, the confirmation is IFRS 11, clearly, because IFRS 11 talks about the creation, the formation of a joint operation or joint venture. If it is subsequently, then it is an acquisition of something which exists between different parties. And whether you are a joint operator because you share joint control at that time, or whether you are not a joint operator but a participant in the joint operation, doesn't share in the control, if I understand correctly our definitions, different situations. So it seems to me it's a vast question. I don't see exactly how the different cases, fact patterns, would be covered. So it would help me to understand exactly the type of situations that would be covered.
I would summarize it as being that IFRS 11 tells us when we are a party to a joint arrangement, including a joint operation, this is how you do the accounting. And by and large, IFRS 11 says that if it's this type of joint arrangement, then you look at this these standards. If it's this other type of joint arrangement, then you look at these other standards to apply. And that's what we first of all focused on. And we saw that there was the general reference to apply applicable IFRSs. And the issue then came down to, well, is IFRS 3 one of those applicable IFRSs? And the conclusion of the committee was that the principles in IFRS 3 should be applied as the applicable guidance when you're acquiring an interest in a joint operation, even though IFRS 3 itself only deals with obtaining control. And so because it deals with obtaining control, we identified that we needed to add this additional guidance to IFRS 11 so that you could connect through to IFRS 3 because you're only obtaining joint control.
Okay, I have Andrew, Fei Long, Laurence.
Well, I agree with the general reference approach, very much so, and I think if we're going to start making consequential amendments to other standards and listing all the things that don't apply, then we're moving away from that approach to the alternative, personally. And I'm happy with the things listed in A to D. I could see why you don't actually need them if people applied IFRS 3. The principles of IFRS 3 with a bit of common sense. And I actually, the paragraph B39 that talks about, B39 says you don't recognise anybody else's other interests, and I would have thought if you're dealing with a joint arrangement, that's pretty self-evident, frankly. And I don't even see that paragraph as being necessary. You could deal with that by amending the words of B38 to something along the lines when an entity acquires an interest in a joint operation, it shall apply to the extent of its interest according to paragraph 20, the relevant principles of business combination accounting. I just think we're making a mountain out of a molehill, frankly.
Laurence? Sorry, Fei Long, I'll get back to you.
I agree with the proposed amendment. However, a couple of additional and more explicit guidance may be considered. Besides the deferred tax and the fundamental issue relating to recognition of the deferred tax, it looks like continue to exist. Besides that, the measurement of consideration we need to consider. And I also agree with that the fair value approach and agree with staff recommendation to clarify IFRS 11. But one comment on the paragraph B30A is that in this first sentence, it should apply the relevant principles. I understand that the company is using measurement principle, and can we change the relevant into a measurement in this sentence?
Okay, with the relevant principles are both recognition and measurement, though.
Yeah. B38.
That's what I mean.
They use relevant principles, and can we just directly use the change the relevant to measurement principles?
I don't. I'm afraid that I, for one, don't think that works. I think I was going to suggest if people are disturbed by the A to D, if you just added the words all of. All of the relevant principles. That would stop the cherry picking. But they're both recognition and measurement principles.
Yeah.
Laurence?
I'm not going to object, but I'm not comfortable either with the proposal. I have a couple of reasons. The first one is this goodwill that is being recognized, which is described as acquisition or synergies. No, accounting for premiums paid for synergies, written down in C12. When entering or acquiring a joint operation, I am questioning what those synergies are. I have difficulty understanding what those synergies are that are being put on the books. What is this goodwill representative of in a joint operation where you recognize your assets, your liabilities? And I'm concerned that the recognition of this goodwill might just be, in effect, the recognition of internally generated goodwill of the venturer. Perhaps. So I am uncomfortable understanding in real life examples of real joint operation, what does this goodwill represent? What is it actually representing? You know, when we do business combination, we try to identify what's behind the residual. What does it represent in nature? Huh? And we can explain it's workforce, it's whatever. So you can put some labels. But in joint operation, I have difficulty understanding what is the nature of this goodwill, other than a residual that we book because it's convenient and we just do as under IFRS 3. Isn't it, and perhaps it's because maybe I'm in one of the camps you described in basis of conclusion, isn't it effectively, if it is a premium, isn't it a premium for acquiring additional assets that we'll be recognizing on your books? So this is why I'm not going to object, so that it goes out and we can get further information and further feedback on it. But I must say, at the moment, I feel uncomfortable with this goodwill recognition as long as I'm not able to understand better what it represents in a joint operation.
Scott and then Guido.
I'm okay with the proposal as drafted. I also wouldn't mind taking out the A through D bits that say which parts of IFRS 3 are important. I can go either way. I think as drafted, it still reads that you have to apply all of the relevant principles, but if we want to make that clearer, that's okay too. Right, exactly. So, I mean, I whatever people think will work best and be read consistently, I mean, I'll go with the majority there, but I think this... I think this is in the right direction. I have no concerns about the goodwill. It represents the same stuff it does when you acquire 100% of an entity. It could be workforce. It could be customer base. It could be you paid too freaking much. And we know that. I mean, goodwill is a mess, and it's no more of a mess in this situation. So I'm okay. I think this does the job, and it'll help.
Okay. Guido, then Luca, then Ruth. Sorry.
Touching it. Okay, so I would be fine with changing B38 in a way that you should apply all recognition and measurement principles in IFRS 3. We should think about the disclosures maybe again. What has been said here is to disclose the relevant information, because I think we included the word relevant because not all of the information required by IFRS 3 does make sense in a situation that we are looking at here. Some of the disclosures relate to non-controlling interest. There is a disclosure requirement in there that if you have a business combination or business acquired in stages, that the fair value of the interest that you had before should be disclosed, which I don't think would apply here. So I don't know whether it makes sense just to say the relevant disclosures or whether we should make it more explicit that not all of the disclosure requirements in IFRS 3 apply here.
Luca?
I got more or less the same concern on Philippe. I think that it should be clarified that if this addition interpretation has to be applied for the formation or for the acquisition, it's necessary to specify better that this is the approach for both of the cases. And in other sense, it means that we are reintroducing inside IFRS 11 something that is more similar to a proportional consolidation, that is something that, looking at some or basis of all conclusion, seems to be different in IFRS 11. The second is linked with an aspect related to the item. We have made it all the efforts looking at IFRS 11, considering that for the time that we will be able to use something, IFRS 11 will be in place. But there are strong rumors that could be a request to postpone the application of IFRS 11 to 2014. And so I don't think that if we need to do some remarks or some consideration for the present EIF 31, looking at that if the time for the application of the new standards will be postponed, we should probably have a couple of years with the old standards still in place.
So you're saying just that we ought to make sure that whatever 11 goes into place, this goes with it, not before, which obviously, yeah. Ruth, I think you're next.
Just going back to that discussion on minimalizing the minimalist approach and the A through D, I would support keeping A through D somewhere. I mean, I don't mind if it's not in B38, but I'd like it to be somewhere. So maybe it's in the basis. But I think if we don't put it in somewhere, people won't get the message when they read it. And we'll get the question again for the next IFRIC in 10 years' time when IFRS 11 finally applies. We'll get the same question. And so I think we need to be clear on it. Because those were the questions asked of us, and we've answered them, and I think it would be a shame now to just dispense with it.
I mean, the reason why we put it in this draft in Section B, Appendix B of the standards, because that's part of the mandatory requirements of the standard, and so we felt that that was worthwhile putting it in there. But obviously, we're listening to what you're saying, and if you feel that the basis is sufficient, then we could move it to the basis. But that's not our reason for why we proposed it there.
I would keep it in B38 then, my personal view.
I have to say that one of the rules that every standard setter ought to have hammered into him or her is don't put guidance in the basis. If you want the guidance to be followed, it needs to be in the standard. Bern?
Well, and I agree and support Ruth's comment that we should leave it in. On the other hand, I don't think that putting in all the relevant principles would really do the trick, because the question is the principle relevant to me? And I can wiggle out by saying, no, it's not relevant to me. Even if I say it's all the relevant, I say, well, those three are relevant, but not the fourth one. So if we want all four of them followed, then we should rather say the relevant principles on business combinations accounting include, and that means that these four are relevant. There might be others, but these four are the relevant ones, and you have to follow these four, and not all in the first part of them, B38.
Peggy?
That point, could you say relevant principles include, include but are not limited to the following?
Yeah. Let me try this. Who would object to doing what Peggy just suggested? Who would vote no to doing that? Not grumble, Joanna. Who would vote no?
I should have asked that question the other way around. It's more action for you.
I've been through this before.
Would I describe you as sullen but not mutinous? Okay. To quote Jim Leisenring. Okay, that's what we'll do. Philippe?
I'm sorry to come back to my point, but I really struggle to see how open formation of a joint operation by two people who share and joint control, you could have a goodwill resulting from the formation of a joint operation. Given the nature of a joint operation, if you think of the definitions we have for joint operation, people put in common something they have. How can that result in having a goodwill on that transaction? I need an example.
I can give you an example. If you had two entities who have got existing businesses and they decide to combine them into one over which they will have joint control, then the bringing together of those two businesses, you get greater synergies, creating new goodwill from those new synergies.
Which, Laurence, has a problem with the internal goodwill that you have, because putting two things together and combining your own goodwills to create a new goodwill, I think I go back to Laurent's point. Is that really...
We have the same thing with...
New goodwill, or is that internally generated goodwill that you put together? Does it create a new goodwill? Okay, well,
we have the same thing with regular business combinations, because you're bringing together the business you're acquiring and obtaining control over with your existing operations, and it's the synergies between those two that you're recognizing as the
because
goodwill.
You have an exchange transaction. You exchange your interest in something, you get an interest in someone else's. And here, just putting together your interest, I'm not sure you are exchanging anything with a partner or joint operator, your co-operator. I'm not sure you're really exchanging anything which would be the basis for organizing goodwill. So I really think about it and give me an example. Because as board member, I have difficulties trying to position myself later on in with this interpretation if I don't understand really the economics of it.
Well, if there was, let me take a stab at it, Philippe, because I think I understand your frustration. If it's really what I would call a straight up formation of a partnership, then you would think that the fair value of what we contribute is equal to the proportionate share that we obtain, and therefore there's no debit left over at the end of the day that I would worry about. However, I don't think we ever really try to analyze goodwill as to say it's, we got to have that debit somewhere. And if there is a debit, and so if somebody paid a premium to join this deal, then you've got to put a debit somewhere.
Given the restrictive definition that we have put around the notion of a joint operation, I'm not sure that you can say that you contribute upon formation at an amount which is different from what you have, unless you replace someone and you pay a fair value at a time after someone has contributed his asset and you come after, and then you have to pay the fair value, which may be different from the initial fair value. But really, I'm struggling. At the real formation, pure formation, I'm struggling with that. Because you're not exchanging your interest with someone else's interest. Your own, each one is bringing its own share.
Scott and then Peggy.
I think this is a question that we get into in the IAS 27 versus 613 issue. If two parties each contribute assets to a newly formed joint operation and each take back a 50% interest in each of those assets, the accounting, I think, is going to wind up being that that's a fair value transaction. You're going to recognize a gain. And then you're going to recognize your interest in the 50% of the assets that you used to own 100% of, and the 50% interest in the assets you used to own zero of. And you're going to recognize both of those at fair value, even though the assets that you used to own 100% of, one could argue that you didn't sell all of those and therefore shouldn't recognize all the gain. Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever you think the answer is, the standards tell us to record the gain there. And so whether that gain represents the fact that the assets were on your books for 100 and they're worth 200, or whether it represents the fact that embedded in that group of assets was also goodwill, you're going to recognize the gain anyways. And I think that's what we're left with as a consequence of the decision that when you lose control, you recognize things at fair value. I think we're left with that. I don't think the problem is goodwill or limited to goodwill. I think it's the same issue everywhere else.
Yeah, but here there is a point. According to IS 27-3, you have a gain only at the time you go from a situation where you have no control to a situation where you have control, or from where you have control, you have no longer control. That's the two points where you have a fair value gain. Mm-hmm. Okay. In between, any change in your percentage of ownership without gaining or losing control has no P&L impact. There is no gain recognized.
Then we have a different question.
Okay.
if we're not going to recognize the gain, we won't recognize goodwill either, right?
We're in the statements of the joint venture, not the statements of the venturer.
We're on the venturer's statements. We're not on the venture's statements.
That's right. Excuse me.
We're on
Excuse
the venturer's me.
You're absolutely statements. Right. Peggy, you had a light on at one point.
Yeah,
did you get everything?
I was going to say something to Scott, and I was just trying to think of an example of how you could end up, you know, having goodwill on something like this. But if you had, say, two cable TV providers, two different utility companies, let's say that were in adjacent markets, and then they decided to combine, and it's the same businesses, but now you can perhaps have a much lower future potential cost because you're able to get economies of scale in a particular geographic region. So that would be, you know, something where you could say, well, there is goodwill created as a result of that, even though we're still doing the same thing we were doing.
And there could be goodwill already just from a workforce, right? We don't recognize a workforce intangible. There could be goodwill there.
Let's do Joanna and then Wei Guo.
The question, I understand what where Philippe is coming from in terms of sometimes in a formation, absolutely there won't be any residual goodwill. But the way this is worded and the way we've done it is to say, if there is anything left over, we're going to call it goodwill. Yeah. Just like under IFRS 3, if there is anything left over, we call it goodwill. And yes, then the economic analysis to say, well, what the hell is it? But effectively, it still is. If there's anything left over, it's goodwill. And Philippe, I think that, you know, in 90% of the circumstances and formation, there probably won't be anything left over. If there's an acquisition, there will. So I think it's important we raise it, although acknowledging the fact that it won't be there in a lot of circumstances.
To try to clarify the circumstances, because I would not think that we should put any doubt in the mind of people that creating, participating at the creation is something different from what you are used to see, and that there is suddenly a new element of goodwill here, especially.
Michael?
Yes, the starting questions from Philippe is quite important. You know, whether we deal with acquisition or the formation. And as we now think about it, in any formation type of transactions, have we think about any chance to have goodwill? I don't think so. You know, if, for example, A contribute $1 million in cash, B contributing $1 million, let's assume PPE, but because B have original operation, and then both sides agree B may account for more ownership. So the consequence will be the ownership difference rather than the difference in the measurement of the underlying. So I don't think, agreed, I don't think there is any chance to have goodwill.
But remember, we are talking about a business here. So your $1 million cash and $1 million of PP&E actually won't fit into here anyway, because we are actually only talking about when it is a business that is contributed, not actually a formation of any old joint operation. It's actually a business.
Yes, I think the consequence will be in the future, the distribution pattern of any benefits will be infected, rather than, you know, you put a plug and call it goodwill.
We're going to get board members arguing with each other.
No, I'm talking with Joanna now.
Thanks.
Something very important to clarify. She said, when you are contributed businesses together to form a business, that is not the request. The request is when the result of that transaction is a business.
That's right.
You contribute, I contribute cash, you contribute some assets, and the resulting element is a business.
All right. I'm wrong. I take it back. I apologize.
I think this is why I think it's very complex and very diverse situations. You contribute cash, I contribute a business, the resulting element is a business.
Yes.
Or we both contribute asset, the resulting element is or is not a business, depending on what how independent it is from the venturers, etc. So to see all the implications of what you're saying, I think we need to, in my view, in my humble view, to do a series of possible type of transactions and clarify really what we're talking about, what and when it happens.
Well, actually, I'm not worried at all about the goodwill part, because I feel that most people think there can be no goodwill upon these transactions. But if there is no goodwill, then it's zero, it's not recorded. So why shall we talk this over and over again? Because if there is no goodwill, well, there are a lot of pieces of regulation in the literature that are never applied because they are, just don't happen to be in practical circumstances. But if there is one, this one situation, then we cover it. So why shall we worry about it? It's a practical issue. It's not something that we should really need to worry about.
Okay, I'm losing my scorecard, but I think it's Laurence, Luca, Keto. Wegwo, are you through? Okay. Bert, you're through, aren't you?
I'm done, yeah.
Contributing to my discomfort with the proposal on having this goodwill being recognized, the paper does not address those cases where you have purchases or sales of an interest in your joint operation and you keep being in joint operation. So are you going to recognize further goodwill? Are you going to decrease your goodwill? If so, this is inconsistent with what we do with IFRS 3. So what's the connection with IFRS 3? Also, if you subsequently acquire control, you have already recognized a piece of goodwill. So what are you going to remeasure that goodwill, revalue that goodwill? I have all sorts of questions. about how does this work in case of a joint operation.
And so your solution would be what? Address all of them or address none?
No, I mean the solution came that we need a little bit more work to have a comprehensive view of how this works. Need a little bit more work.
Okay. Andrew?
Well, sorry, I just thought we were trying to answer a very simple question when we started this. Do you apply principles of IFRS 3 to this situation, an acquisition? And I think where we got to is yes, and we seem to be going down all sorts of potential tangents to the extent that we'll probably end up delaying any guidance, if at all, for some considerable time. I just don't see why we're making it so complicated.
Did you want to get back in, Laurence?
Just one thing about that goodwill. That goodwill may just arise because you have recognized deferred tax liabilities.
Same as a business combination. You'd have the same issue in a business combination. Okay, Ruth, Scott, and Bernd.
I was going to make the same point as Andrew. We were asked a question. We had a choice of three alternatives. One is account for everything at cost, no fair value. The other one, and there was some support for that, but not a majority. The second was we could account for everything at fair value, which would necessarily possibly result in goodwill or something else that arose. And the third was we could cherry pick and let people do a bit of this and a bit of that, and if they didn't like goodwill, then they didn't need to do it. And I thought we agreed that of the three, the closest and best fit principle was IFRS 3. And so I agree with Andrew. I think this is where we got to in answering that question. And I think we're overcomplicating it now. And I'm not sure I want the staff to go away and do any more work at this point, because we have answered the question that was asked of us.
Todd?
I agree with Andrew. I agree with Ruth. I think by looking into, gee, do we feel okay about goodwill in this situation, well, I mean, I feel bad about goodwill in business combinations sometimes, but it is what it is. I mean, it's the best answer that we've come up with, and I don't see any reason to apply it any differently here.
Sure.
Andrew, with Ruth and Scott. And if we're really troubled with goodwill, then we can leave it out of the mandatory relevant principles, because still, if it's relevant to a specific transaction, then these people have to apply it. But if so, we don't make them, we don't point them at goodwill if we leave it out of B38 or whatever. So we have A, B, C, and we leave out D. And if goodwill arises, which is obviously very unlikely, then it's relevant. But we can leave it in, because if it doesn't arise, it's not relevant anyway. Unless we make people recognize goodwill.
Guido and Luca, and then let's see if we can put a ribbon on this.
I have to say I'm a little bit confused now, because I thought that you only apply IFRS 3 in a situation where you acquire an interest in a joint operation that is already, that constitutes a business. And I can imagine that you also have that upon formation of a joint venture if the other party contributes a business, which is already a business. I think if the formation of the joint venture itself, by putting together assets and liabilities, and this new assets and liabilities group is a business, then I think then this paragraph 21A doesn't apply. So it's on acquisition of an interest and also formation of a joint venture if there is something in there that is already a business. And in this case, only in this case, my understanding was IFRS 3 applies. Now, the only problem that we may have then is that IFRS 3.2a excludes the formation of a joint venture, so we need to think about that, because that seems to be a little bit contradictory. Well, maybe the staff has thought about it, but I just looked into IFRS 3 and said, well, formation of a joint venture is excluded, but then we go into IFRS 11 and say, well, some formations of a joint venture, when there is already a business in there from one of the parties contributed, then IFRS 3 may apply.
Didn't we?
Michael.
Yeah.
We've gotten the wrong statements already.
You know, the point you're referring to is that we took to the board last month. It's all about the financial statements of the joint arrangement itself.
I got it.
The board has agreed to clarify that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I see three decisions that we need to make. The first is there seems to be a groundswell, at least in the last few comments, for limiting this discussion to the question asked rather than attempting to go into other potentially cross-cutting issues, so keeping it narrow. Do I see any objections to keeping it narrow? Okay. The second bit is the A to D guidance. And I guess I saw a fair amount of disagreement. Who would prefer to keep the A to D in the standard or in the guidance itself? Okay, that's a clear majority. The third bit is the example. There are some members of the staff here at the IASB who were troubled by having the example in there, and Michael, you may be able to speak to why, because you were involved in those conversations and I wasn't.
Yes. And I think it was more along the lines that IFRS 11 is predominantly about directing you to the relevant guidance elsewhere in IFRS's, where you will find the guidance on how to account for things, as opposed to giving you the guidance itself. And I think this was seen as perhaps going one step further than maybe was necessary in order to provide the guidance that we've been asked to provide.
That said, if it is the view of the committee that we should include this, we will take that forward to the board and we can have that argument there. So, Ruth?
Can I just explain why I thought it was good? It's not only to do with this issue, the IFRS 3 issue. It's more broadly, what do we mean by accounting for our share of the our proportionate share of the assets and liabilities, which is a current practice issue? Because people, for whatever reason, they don't understand. And I think your example clarifies it very well. And that's why I would support putting it in, because I think it does address the broader issue of how to do the accounting.
Who all would prefer to include the example? Andrew?
Do you mean include it in the standard or include it as application? As an example.
Application guidance.
Well, application guidance is the part that is integral to the standard. So this would be an illustrative example, which is not mandatory guidance. It's helpful. So including it as non-mandatory guidance, who would support that? Yeah, I think that's pretty much unanimous. All right, anything else, or are we done?
For recommendation to the board.
We have a recommendation to the board. I notice you've been busily taking notes about editorial comments. Once again, anybody who has any editorial suggestions, feed them in to Tom.